I on, Jonathan? Okay. All right. I get to move into a new role here. My favorite thing to do in life is to coach. And I use coaching as an excuse to mentor young men in the values of effort, respect, and excellence. And by doing that, the small little school that we've done, we've actually become a powerhouse in soccer, which is kind of exciting. Our school has 47 kids in the high school. I know. How big is your school for where your kids go? 1,400? Well, in Lansing, we're so good in soccer that most of the Division I schools won't play us in Lansing, so we had to go outside and beat up on them. But the fun thing about I first came to you as in Dr. Emhoff, blah, 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 shirt and tie. I hate tie. That's the first time I wore a tie I quit wearing ties like 10 years ago or something, 15 years ago. But there's an image that people have when it comes to money and finances. If he looks this way, then he must know this or that. And see, what you can't see by the outside is where the heart's at. And see, what I try to, the difference in what, I mean, because anyone can come up and talk about money and finance, but most people cannot discern where's your heart at. What really makes you tick? Why are you doing what you're doing? To throw questions back at you, I mean, I'm pretty quick at, well, why? What is the purpose? When you assign purpose to what you're doing, and assign purpose to your deeds, assign purpose to your time, assign purpose to your energy, it'll start giving you a clarity that will get us out of staying in this fearful mode that our culture and society is stuck in. I've been around a long time. It has never been like this in the financial world for over almost 80 years. We haven't seen it in our lifetime. So this next area that I want to go into on here is, go ahead to Jonathan, next slide, is talking about, the second question is, where's your heart at? So when I sit down on here, and the thing is, there's a heartbeat of, whether I'm sitting down with a mom, a dad, a single person, a divorced person, a widowed person, there is a heartbeat with them, but there's also, I found, a heartbeat in a class. There's a demographics here, which is very, very fascinating to me, is I've taught probably thousands of times financial classes, and most of the classes are filled with 90% women. It is rare to get a man to come to the financial presentations. And this has got probably more men probably than women. It's the $100 giveaway. I thought it was food that got them here. It was the money on here, because they keep it. But so the thing on here, there's a heartbeat on here, and I really want to do a presentation that would relate to you. So I'm coming to you as a coach right now. And I love coaching. I love taking you from where you're at to take you to another level. And most of the coaches that you see that the world might seem as hard are those that the kids love the most. You know, that will stand between you and the enemy, the other opponents, the referees. I mean, you hurt my kids, I'm going to hurt you. You know, I'm bad. I have principles out there. And so when I go on the field, I mean, this is my look out here. I'm Coach Emhoff. And all the kids in Lansing, Michigan know me as Coach Emhoff. And so what I want to do today is just set the groundwork. Okay, now we're going to go into training. All right? And if your heart's not in it, and you're anyone ever been an athlete, athletics in any capacity? Now, I don't know if you do bowling, but I don't classify bowling as a sport on here. Is it? Okay. I mean, some people love it, but I just don't. I mean, I know it takes some strength, but the thing on here is the training side of it, the discipline that happens in the training, the discipline that happens, the hours on the practice field, the discipline that happens in the hundreds of push-ups, the thousands of sprints, and all the stuff that happens away from practice on here, which separates you from being average and being extraordinary. So this training mode on here, if your heart's not in it, could your coach tell if you were having a bad day? Okay. Did he care? Most likely, he didn't care as long as it didn't interrupt what he was doing, which is moving forward to beat the opponents next week. He didn't have time for you to have a pity party. He didn't have time for you to have a bad day, right? My coaches didn't. I mean, they really didn't care how I felt. You know, I had a purpose. I had a team I couldn't let down. And you see, your team begins with your family. You know, your children. If you don't have children, it goes to your mom and dad. There's a team that you're trying to build. If it's just a team of one like tennis, you know, you got to start moving forward on that. So the thing on where your heart's at, and what I found in finances is if your heart's messed up, you're going to blow up your financial world. You know, if your heart's messed up in a relationship, you're going to blow up your financial world. So this next section on here that I think is, again, very, very unique in the financial realm is I'm always trying to find out, asking questions on where are people at? And I one of the questions I ask here is, you know, where's your heart at? And I says, you know, is it wounded? And the question isn't wounded, is how is it wounded? There are wounds in our heart to go back. I could say one thing and it trigger emotion and people could burst into tears. If I hit that right nerve, you know, today you could say certain things to me and I about some things that happened and I wouldn't pick the chair up and throw it. I'd have to break something. You know, I would get riled up. I can actually talk about a couple things and not have it. So the key is how you take a wound from, you know, that the pus and infection is still in it, take the spear out, take the knife out, and let it turn into a scar. Okay? So part of being, the tough part on here, the tough love, is that we need to move through this where we're at. But we have to deal with the wounds. And we'll give you some tools, hopefully this morning in the next 45 minutes, that will help you do that. So one of the questions on here that I look at, and I'm going to take you to a visual in a second, is where's your heart at? Is it lost? Is it wounded? Is it broken? Is it rebellious? Is it wise, passionate, forgiving, loving? So go ahead, go to the next slide on here. On it. The lesser part is what's it about? It's the numbers, feelings, connection, and the heartbeats. And I put the word connection on here because that is what God wants with you. He wants to connect. Your spirit, you have an innate desire to be connected with your Creator. It is there. I don't know why, but it is there. So if I can help move you one step towards a connection, towards your Creator, I think I'm at least doing a good thing. Even if you're mad at anyone and put your fist in his face. And the effect on here that I have to deal with, and again, this is a financial presentation that I am wise enough to know that if you're lost and confused about your job and about your present, and you're worried about your future. And see, my personality, I'm so analytical. I live better 10 years in the future than I live in today. And I realize I'm losing life. I'm not enjoying every aspect. Where I come alive is when I'm on the sport field, when I'm on the soccer field. I mean, my kids are disciplined. You know, we have the best equipment. I raise all the money for my program. Our kids go out there. If they know the New Covenant sports, we have colleges that talk about us. So, I mean, it's because of excellence and the reputation that we have. And let me keep moving. The logically is the lost and confused. The emotionally is the wounded and offended on here. Emotionally, that's a law of justification. People make decisions emotionally and defend them logically, emotionally, spiritual relations. So if you are emotional and you're wounded and offended and you're making decisions based on that foundation, you're going to blow up your financial household. And it's going to blow up your spiritual relationship, and it's going to damage your relationship with everyone around you. Everyone around you. You know, you're mad at the person at the gas station because the person didn't get out of your way fast enough. I mean, every area of your life, the anger wound is there. The spiritually rebellious and wounded, I can relate to that one now on here. Those are big ones. You know, I grew up, you know, a decent human being, went to a Christian school, so don't hold that against me on there. I really thought there was a certain image, and I said, no, there's a whole other connection that God wants me to have and wants me to teach other people, get away from the judgment and condemnation, all that. And relationally, broken and hurt, whether you're coming out of a divorce situation or a loss of a loved one or whatever, a fight or whatever, I want to see how we can move through that today. Next slide. So here's the, I was afraid that wouldn't come up very good. The four areas of it, on it, which you can't see real well. Grab my sword here. On here. On this one, the lost and confused. So when people come into me, they are... I felt that when I came here today, I could not teach 17 common money mistakes, 7 problems with money, 9 spending disciplines that most people mess up. I could not come in here and be judgmental. Because you're getting too much of the garbage out there from every other area. So the lost and confused side of it, that comes with, I have to give you direction. What's the direction that you're looking for? And I'm going to give you, the last part is, you know, this is the map side of it. Where I'm going to give you an actual, a picture, a visual picture of what it looks like to have your financial house in order. So I'm going to give you end result thinking in a second. So what I find is most people guard their heart so much that it can't get and live in the area of passion and loving and forgiving. And so I want to try and see if we can whittle away that wall, barrier wall that you've put around your heart from something. There's something that your dad might have said or your mom might have done or someone had offended you in your childhood that is a wall around your heart and you haven't quite gotten that sliver out and it's infected. And, you know, a perfect example of that, I had a situation where I had it was a bump on my finger and it just hurt. And I'd squeeze it, you know, and I'd get like a lymph out of it and just for weeks and weeks and it'd go away and then and it just kept coming back. And then one day I just squeezed as hard as I could and it's like, oh! And all it shot out a black sliver. It was a metal sliver that got below the skin and it was infected. And it was at least a month or 6 weeks of pain. And somehow when I was working in the shed or something, I got a metal sliver. And then I realized that's how a lot of people are in life. On the outside, it looked like it was because it healed over the top. And I'd take a needle and pop it in and I couldn't find it. But boy, did that hurt. Have you ever had those kind of wounds? They hurt. It's like, oh. And so you have to get to the source of the wound, the source of the sliver, and get it out. And there's a process I'm going to teach you called memory completion. I'm going to introduce a concept that I'm working on. I'd like to come back someday and teach you how to do it because I'm just going to introduce the concept of memory completion. So the emotional side of it is, boy, we can get really, we're too easily offended. And we're offended about stuff that really doesn't matter. And what happens is there's an underlying sliver. If you have that anger in you, you might want to write this down. There's a blame card, B-L-A-M-E. I'm going to talk about it on the next 2 slides. Blame card in your life. You are blaming somebody for an offense that's happened or a wound that's still there. And the key word on it says wound. It does not say scar. Okay? I'd like to maybe get to some of the wounds today so you can get, again, what does this have to do with money? Does this have anything to do with money? If your heart's messed up, I mean, how do you feel about giving when you're you can't hardly pay your bills? You'd like to give more, but you feel you can't. The spiritual side of it, the thing that's bad about the spiritual side in our society is, you know what? We wouldn't expect people in the church to hurt us. I mean, to do things. I expect people where I grew up where they didn't really know God. I'd expect them to say and do what they did. But I would not expect someone that has been under the teaching of a godly minister for years and years and years and years to hurt and to go out of their way to betray you. But see, Satan has a tendency to use anybody he wants to get to you, to create you ineffective in anything and everything. If you're ineffective, if you're dynamic, ineffective, I've been ineffective for too long. On a massive scale. I want to teach the masses, not just individuals. I want to go to another level. I've been ineffective as I've been licking my wounds and actually pouring acid on them every time I felt that it wasn't going my way. The wounded, the rebellious and wounded there, and then the broken and hurt in the relationship. There's people that Susan has a brother The mom and brother were so much alike. They hated each other. He wouldn't even come in the house. I'm here to tell you that my mom, when she was dying, the bedroom, it was in the back of the house. My older brother came. I was sitting in the room like this, and the door's right here, and mom's in her bed, and she had Lou Gehrig's with me, and she just laid there and couldn't hardly, you know, just horrible. And she, Dad had her propped up a little bit, and Dad was sitting on the bed by her and crying, and my brother David stood at the end of that. I mean, he came in the hallway, and he stood. He had never been in that end of the house in probably 12 or 15 years. And what are you doing here? Oh, I just wanted to say hi to Mom. And then Mom did her mumble, blah, 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 blah stuff that Dad couldn't understand what she was saying. And he goes, "She wants a hug." And my brother David said, "I could do that." And the tears flowed. And forgiveness began. And healing and restoration of a wounded spirit for half their lives was wasted. And he gave her a hug. And that's it. And he walked out and went away. I couldn't believe it. That is a broken and hurt spirit that was carried into his first divorce, his second divorce, and his third and fourth, fifth thing that he had. Wounds of a father, a mother, and a son. And it took a hug. Unbelievable. On here I put on the where you get on the inside, which is that word right here, says loving and forgiving, and they're interchangeable. We don't have... Wouldn't it be exciting to be part of a church or an institution or anything that believed that forgiveness was important part of its existence? The least forgiving institution that I've seen in my 50 years of life is the church. Terrible. My goal is to help start changing that by, one, me forgiving, me asking for forgiveness, me walking in forgiveness, and the people that offended to move towards them. Now, if I go to a person that I've offended, they've offended me, and they don't want any part of it, that's free will. I can't change their free will. But I'm washed of that burden. So, again, on here, the challenge with this part of the wounds on here, the only daring I could possibly get on here is I went and found some wine. Wish we could do is do communion, I guess. But what happens is when people are wounded, they will turn to things that may not be appropriate to an excessive extent and get, you know, alcohol and drugs and pornography and things that they shouldn't be in. So they turn to these things thinking that it's going to be okay, and inside they're feeling like this guy. And over here, all they want to do is be big dog and be loved. This is my Jameson's big dog. He had this since he's 5 years old. He's 17 now. When I told him I was taking big dog, he goes, "No way." You know, as I where am I going to sleep on weekends? We usually have somewhere between 4 and 8 kids hang out at our house on weekends. And as I was going out the door, 5 kids are coming in. They go, "Where's big dog going?" You know, it's like big dog is going with me. Because this important symbol on it, is like, are you living like this internally? And you want to be like this on here? And relationally, I mean, I've been very fortunate. My wife has continued to love me. 30 years together, 27 married. And I'm always trying to make her laugh, trying to still court her after 27 years. And we have a lot of fun with the boys and stuff because she's the only female. And we have all boys all the time. During soccer season, my backyard's a soccer field. And we have 17 to 20 boys that will come to our house, changing the low level. And it's really exciting to see, I mean, a lot of testosterone in our household and one female. Even our 3 dogs are male dogs. But this little guy here I got for my wife on my 25th anniversary. I thought I don't know if you can hear it, but this is what I got her for my 25th anniversary. Anyways. That's right. Come on. It's silly, but it gets the point across on it. Just have fun in the relationship and there and enjoy the process. So she laughed and laughed and laughed over that silly thing there. and we've been married 27 years now, so I kick it on all the time. But the thing in the relationship side, we turn to the wrong kinds of things, and that's what I want to try and emphasize. We turn to our superhero all here. We turn to a genie when things don't go quite right. We turn to what the world has over here, which is that there's success in business and there's success in having the fancy cars and the fancy houses. And what is it if you were to make $1 million and you lose your family? What is it if you make $1 million and you keep your family but you lose your soul and you go to hell? What is that all about on here? And what happens in mankind, we have this, and this is how appropriate, is I had this clock, and it's so appropriate, is that the battery died last night in it. And I thought, you know what, this is a great symbol, is that you have a battery, a lifeline that's going to run out someday. You are mortal. You will die. And we think that we have lots of time. My close friend Sue, she was given 90 days and died 93 days later. It changed how she lived those last 90 days. She went to a Tigers baseball game. Her family flew in. The family changed their schedule to be with her on there. So the thing on the time is now for us to start moving and take that crust away, that barrier away on the outside. Are you with me on that? Is that fair? Okay, let's go to the next slide. So moving through fear, where's your heart at? In the past, there's hurt. And then, what are we going to do? Is there love in the past? The present, the future is hopeless or hope? Which one are you going to choose? It's a choice. My goal today is to have you try and move, get your heart right so we can move forward. I mean, how many people here absolutely, without a doubt, love going into work on Monday morning? Anyone here love it? One person, two persons, three, four? Pastor, he's lying. He just wants to keep his job on there. But, you look at that. In a room of, I don't know if there's 100 people, whatever, but three or four or five people. Is there anyone here that just drudge dreary thought of going in and making a living on Monday? Anyone have a drudgery? No, everyone? No one's, if you had a choice of fishing or going into work, fish would win? All right. So the understand on here, a pain in your past that is brought into your present and is rooted in an unfinished memory of your life. And I'm at the very end, I'm going to just touch on that. But if you think on that right there, there are pains that, is there anything you've done and all of a sudden you trigger and you get riled up? Come on. Those things are keeping you from moving forward and moving through financially also. And the second part on here, blame is the fuel to your anger that keeps your unfinished memory alive. I blame this person for doing that. I blame that company for doing this. And if you keep pulling that blame card out, you're going to destroy your life. And what I found is if you take the blame card out of everything, your anger will go away. Your anger will die. Your anger will subside. Are you with me on that one? Take the blame card out. If you can take the blame card out, it will change how you treat your kids. I mean, at my house, I park in the garage. I come in the back door. Have you ever come in the back door and you it's like you go and you hit and you can't get in because the kids laid all their shoes and stuff and junk right here? So you're walking, you come up the steps, and you go like this. And you got stuff in, and you go like that, and you can't. And it's like, oh, I used to get riled up about that. Anyone else get riled up? Where does that kid get that move? That stupid shoes. I did that until I had a client come in my office one day, and his 16-year-old son was just killed in a car accident. And so we had to do a death claim and junk like that. So I walk into the home that night, and I hit the door, and I go, oh. And my thought was, praise Jesus, Jameson's home. And I've changed how I lived. So I don't blame my kid for interfering with my life. I thank God for putting him into it. And that one area has changed. I have permanently changed that on there. So the blame, and that's just one example of the blame card. That person at work that's trying to undermine your efforts. That person that's trying to, that company is taking away your pension. That company is going to do this or that. The pension funds are going to be a Pensions are dinosaurs. They're going to go away. 1974, they were started, basically. And within our lifetime, our generations, pensions will come and die. General Motors is most likely will probably end up in bankruptcy, and they will default on their pension. They're probably going down that path. All the big three will probably come to little two. I mean, last I heard, Chrysler's not going to be, they're going to be old Fiats in the Chrysler plants. They talk of mergers of General Motors and Ford. Oh, my goodness, that'd be horrible. General Motors and Ford? Man, Chevy F-150? Oh. It hurt to say that. But the blame card on here is like, where's your heart at? So when I'm sitting down in a meeting, and it's like, he spends all that money on this, and I can't, you know, it's like he's spending because he's trying to get away from you yelling. And so he's actually creating the fuel to do it. So this here is, it's a simple concept, but that blame card on here, the behavior of people spending money flows towards where their heart's at. So next slide. What I want you to do right now is just, if I was to take a pulse of your household, which is it? Is it a loving household, or is there more arguing and fighting? If you go 50-50, is there more love in your house, or is there more a lot of tension, arguing, fighting? And just say, so if you put left side or right side, just there's 1, 2, 3, I think there's like 13 things. Just count how many, just do like a 1. So if your household is loving or arguing, fighting, and you see, you have to be truthful on this, if you're going to get to the real issue, which is having a lovely life, a loving family, a loving household, and it begins with your heartbeat on here. So, is your household joyful or sad and depressed? I'm here to tell you there are more people on the right side because of the way that the appearance of the economy right now. The peaceful or stressed, where are you at? Come on. This is, no, peace and stress don't exist together. It's like being, well, when the thing is, the difference in that is when there could be a storm all around you and your sense of peace inside, that means God's in the middle of it. And if there's not in the middle of it, if you're not underneath that protection, there's a distinctive physical difference, emotional difference when God's in the center of that storm. We create most of our calamities and challenges and disasters. So, patient, anxiousness, and tense. I'm horrible at patience. Kind, unkind, and rude. I'm probably more kind than rude. Good, bad, or angry. Is a household good? Faithful or fearful and hopeless? Gentle or abusive? I mean, are the words that are spoken to you, to your children, to your parents? I mean, I have one lady that's 60-some years old, her mom's 80-some years old, and the kid goes, she gets that high-pitched voice and is yelling at her mom. I'm thinking, this is an old lady. You're an old lady. You're beating up on an old lady. You know, no wonder she's so tense and mad at everybody. She gets no respect. So that, how do you, the gentle abusive on here, when your kids do something that you don't like, is it gentle response, or do you blow up at them? When your spouse does something, when your neighbor does something, when your coworker does something, where is the household? Then self-control or addictions. We have never had so much access to junk and access to good. You know, my phone's here someplace, and you can get the Bible in 20 languages or 20 different Bible things on, you know, versions. And you can also click a few buttons and you can get pornography on my phone. That's incredibly bad. So self-control or addiction, are you going to run away from the addictions? Where is it? Laughter, yelling. I mean, I'm trying to get, and I like laughter in my household a lot more than yelling. You know, bring a Spaniard into your house, or an African, a 6'5" African that's only spoke French. I mean, you want to laugh. You can hear, I sit down by the river and the alligator came up right between me and my buddy and we jumped, I mean, real life stories. It's unbelievable. A lot of laughter, smiles and tears, undivided and divided. And what happens, see, every fiber in our culture of media is filling you with 100 to 1 probably of stuff on the right side than on the left side. If I pulled up the internet right now, I could find every single topic, I mean, probably 90% of the topics that's horrible. Right? and I purposely didn't want to even plug into this system today. I did not want to. I wanted to at least come in with a clear thought, clear mind. So if you remember that Romans 8:15, where it talks about we're created as beings that are fearful. And I'm here tomorrow morning and tomorrow night, and I might actually teach something at one service and a different thing at the second service and something at the end, because I have very specifics on the Bible is filled with people who were fearful. You know, whether it's Jairus, I'll call him Jerry, he was a priest or a pastor in the old days, and he comes to Jesus, my daughter's dying, please help me, and he goes towards her, and then this lady touches him and she's healed of this blood issue thing, so I mean, it had to be nasty anyways. And she's healed, and her response was, she was afraid. Who touched me? Who touched me? He said, Master, a lot of people touched you. No, who touched me? And see, God's waiting to touch you where he'll turn. Like that. And she was afraid. What did he say? Don't be afraid. It comes up, and the response with Jerry is that, hey, your daughter's dead. Don't bother the Master. Where do you go? Could you imagine that? And I've seen it. People, their children die, and they literally collapse when they hear those words. Your child is dead. And what did Jesus say to the pastor? Don't be afraid. So we're creatures of fear, and the only thing that I can think of in our society, I cannot think of an institution or something to plug into. I know that the Word of God is living, and it lives through heartbeats of people that are messed up. But if you have good intentions, God gives you the grace to be a mess up and still be used by Him. That's the good news. Because I still have anger issues about some things that happened to me. I mean, because I want to fight, and my coaching spirit wants to come out and hurt. It's not supposed to be that way. Okay, so this is a gut check on, I mean, if husbands and wives are here, I mean, you should feel blessed, because it's very rare that I get husbands and wives in here. You want to say, let me ask, is there anyone else that you would have wished could have heard at least one thing I've said today? Any other persons on here? Maybe kids. And see, this on here, that should be the goal of a Christian, to try and reflect the left side. Oh, I did the fruits of the Spirit thing you guys are doing, so I did this for you. Next slide. Okay. Now here, this part on here is, let me see my notes here. Make sure I'm almost done with this. I'm going to have to go fast. Now this part on here, this is just my observations and insights. How do you navigate through the challenges in life? Now on here, I'm a tell-it-like-it-is personality, and if you come in here, I don't tell you what you like to hear. If you're messed up, I'll tell you you're messed up and where I think you're messed up and how do you need to move forward, and this is what we're going to do and how we're going to move through it. But these are things you need to do. I mean, I tell it like a coach tells it. I see it, and we move forward. We can win with the I formation, the T formation, the widespread offense. We can win a lot of different ways, but we're going to move forward, move through it. So these, again, are just my observations on here, and I didn't put all of them, but I'm actually going to say them. On the bottom of this, you know, it's a assigned purpose to every word, deed, every word, deed, dollar, and energy that you have. So, again, a role of a man, if we're trying to see where the heart's at, where you messed up a little bit, the role of a man, again, my observations, is I believe I want to be a provider. I want to be a protector. I want to be a role model for my family, my children, and I want to be that spiritual leader. My wife wants me to be a spiritual leader more than anybody. But those are the areas on here. So if I'm a provider and that ability to provide is messed up, ladies, your husband will feel worthless, will feel incomplete, will feel inadequate, will feel like I'm a loser. So you shouldn't fuel the fire with accusations on there. You should try and, if you understand these, it'll help you get to the heart of where they're at. If I'm not protecting my family, then shame on me. If I'm not being a good role model of, you know, how to handle things and how to love my wife in front of my son and all the kids around here in a decent way, on here, then there's a problem. Now, a woman, and again, I believe that a woman is a caregiver, a nurturer, a partner, and I didn't put it on here because I thought I'd get yelled at if I put this next one, but I'm going to tell you what it is, servant-hearted. I'll sit down and the other day I was sweating and she takes a napkin and she's dabbing my face. What are you, there's teenage boys in front of me and she's wiping my face. You know, let the drip, you know. It's, and the thing on here is, you know, I had one person that was probably one of the strongest women livers that I'd ever known that was said she was a Christian. She was a woman liver until she gave birth to her child. She was going to be a career woman. She gave birth to that child and she says, I'm quitting. That caused all kinds of tension in the family household because they lived on two incomes and she made more than he did. But that child came and she changed everything because she understood it was a nurturing. So as women can give birth, they can nurture, they can, you know, feed, they can do stuff like that. Men, we can't do that. So there's a different, if you understand, again, the partner, my wife's a brilliant partner. Susan, I mean, what a great partner for Mitch. Mitch is where he's at because of the partnership that he has with Susan. It's a called ministry, a sent ministry together. It's a complete ministry together. And see, your family life can be a ministry together also. Now, the identity of a man, again, observation, what we do, what we've done, what we own, what we've accumulated. Because, you know, we're the warriors, you know, we're the hunters. We're going to go out there, we go hunt it, kill it, gut it, drag it in there, put it on our car, show everyone what we're doing, honk as we're going, get out and say, I can't even think what they're two, just a little button spike one or whatever. And then we hang it up in the yard for everyone to see it for a while on it. So it's what we do on it. So, and then a woman's identity is in their family, the children, relationships in their home. So you don't mess with those kind of things on here. It's totally different. So if your identity is in, I've lost my job, and your identity was in your job, you're going to really suffer emotionally and relationally. And it doesn't make it right. It's just saying this is how it is. So if you've lost your ability to earn a living on there right now, or if you're out of a job that you hated, you have to do that lifeline. So well, that's a bad thing. I lost my job. I said, no, that's a good thing. I can do these kinds of things over here. I move into where I'm called to be. So the problem that I see is that our identity is supposed to be in this Bible thing here, and we fail because our culture has filled us with so much of stuff on that right side of the column, that our identity is not in this, because if it was truly in this, we would not have fear. The 23rd Psalm fascinates me. It's like, I thought, why would God want to take me not just through the valley of shadow of death, but he parks a picnic right in front of my enemies to feed me a 6-course meal. I'm thinking, oh, I get it. If I truly trusted God in the presence of my enemies, I could mock my enemies in his presence. Right? See, God wants to know you to know that you're protected. So our identity, and that's, again, our identity is, let's go buy the fancy cars, the fancy homes, the clothes, let's go have the fancy wines and the fancy vacations and all this stuff and the money and the jewels, look at the big diamonds and the coins. Our identity is in the wrong things. Now, women, your identity is usually in the right things. That's why you get so frustrated with men. Why God loves you so much is because you're relation-oriented and relation-created, and God wants relationship with you. You with me on that one? Men think they need to be alone, and they don't need to be alone. They need to be around godly men that allow them to be men. Now, when pressured, what do I find when men are pressured? They shut down. They go into denial, they withdraw, and just leave me, they freaking alone. Right? I'm going to go fishing. I saw that grin there. I'm going to go fishing hunt for 2 weeks. See you later. When they're pressured, they'll blow up. They're pressured, they'll shut down, or they'll blow up and they'll attack. What do they attack with? Their mouths. They attack with their words. They attack with their looks. My dad had a look. It's like, man, he didn't have to say anything. You didn't have a father like that. My dad was quiet. He'd look at me as like, oh my goodness. I'd sprint to get whatever he wanted then. And I had to figure out what he wanted without him telling me, because his eyes said to go get something, and I had to figure out what it was on the way of getting to where I was going, which I didn't know what I was going to get. Did you catch that? The other thing, when they're pressured, they'll put down their mantle of manliness. Mantle manliness is the covering of authority. The mantle of manliness on there, what does that mean? I had a very close friend who went to a Christian college. He decided after having three children that he didn't want to be married anymore and didn't want to be a father anymore. So what he did, he took his mantle off, sat it down, said, I'm out of here. I'm trading you in for something 20 years younger. I'm not a dad anymore. He did that. I've seen a lot of other people do that, but in other things. So that when man's pressured, you pressure them, if you pressure them enough, and they'll get teed off enough, and they'll just say, forget this thing. I don't want this. I'm going to go to the world of pleasure, sensation. Psalm 37:4 says, God will give you the desires of your heart. And every institution I've ever been into teaches incorrectly that verse. I'm going to teach it tomorrow. What they teach is, God will give you the desires of your flesh. Write it down, and you can have this and this and this and this and this. You can pray this car into your life. You can pray the da-da-da-da-da. This is what he wants you to have. The fruits of the Spirit are the desires of the heart, desires of the flesh. Man will put down the mantle of manliness. What does this have to do with anything to do with money? If you understand the man a little bit better, then you can work better in a partnership between you and God and you and your spouse and you and your children. I believe I have a great relationship with my son. And we can work better together because I choose not, I'm the man of the house. This is how it is. A good fearfulness, which means I'll protect you. The other day, it was like -8 degrees below 0 or something like that. Jameson calls me on the cell phone because I said, did you get where you're at? Dad, I got a flat tire. And as he changed the tire, the actual jack broke. It broke, and it came down. And luckily, he had all the lugs off, and it fell. But it fell on, as he was pulling it. So he's like a fraction of a second from getting like really hurt. And he says, no problem. I'll be there in a second. He knows that I'm not going to get mad about a jack that breaks or a flat tire. Are you okay? Are you off? Are you in a parking lot? Okay, I'll be right there. That's what God wants that. Wouldn't you want to have a relationship with somebody that say, hey, I'll be right there. It's okay. I'm not worried about the dollar that it's going to cost me. You know, we take the car in and actually we find that, oh, he needed $800-some worth of extra stuff to make the car extra, like some things were needed. It just needed $800. I said, okay. Because I'm not worried about the dollar sign. I'm worried about the heartbeat. Okay? Now here, women, this is the 32 years in business. I had 11,000 investment accounts. I've seen thousands and thousands of people, taught before tens of thousands of people. The first thing that a woman does when she's pressured is she'll pick up the mantle of manliness and put it on. So picture that. Your household, if my wife tried to put on my mantle of manliness, she weighs like 70 pounds less than me, she puts it on, it won't fit. And she's going around crying because I need a protector, I need a provider, I need a leader, I need someone to help me. And she's going around. And that is the first thing, the mistake as women, because you cannot be the man of the house. Even if you're a single mom, hardest job in the world, you need to have someone that steps in and helps be that role model man for your child, whether it's Pastor Kevin or somebody. You need to have a man figure. Only a man can teach a boy how to become a man. And only a godly man can teach a boy how to become a godly man. But if the godly man is broken and wounded and hurt and infection and poison and all this stuff in their life, he's not going to be a godly man that wants to be role modeled. So on here, so if you understand that, understand it, because they're not paying the bills. So when the guy gets upset about not paying the bills, we have two separate checking accounts. You spend your money, I give you your own here. And they drop it, and you talk about divided of a household. That's horrible. And they put all the pressure on the spouse. The woman gets all the pressure because the man doesn't want to take care of that. I used to pay all the bills until my wife's best friend's husband was killed in a car accident, and she didn't even know how to write a check. So I taught my wife how to do everything, and she gives a report every month, and we have a report for the whole year of everything we do. So my wife knows how to handle the finances because I helped teach her how to do it. And then I allowed her to do it and stay out of her way, and she just tells me what's done at the end of the month. So if you've picked it up today, women, I pray that God will give you the courage to put it back down and put on your beautiful cloak of womanness and do the things that you're gifted at. When they're pressured, women either become emotionless, which is numb and paralyzed, which means there's no tears. They're all cried out. Or they're emotional wreck. That's how it is. And the fourth one I didn't put on there because I thought this would really irritate somebody is when they're pressured, they become overwhelmed and they're filled with loneliness amongst a crowd. Have you seen it? Have you seen it in your household? Have you seen your neighbor's household? Have you seen that overwhelming sense, I can't take it anymore? And see, all a woman's waiting for her to do is have that man to step up between that and that problem and say, no, this is my wife. You need to step back or I'm going to hurt you. Okay? And that person you're talking to might be your old self. The self of February 6th. You need to step up and stand between your spouse and say, I'm going to protect you. We're going to get through this. We're going to make this. We're going to get through this garbage that's going on in this culture. We're going to thrive through it. But we will not divide our relationship or our marriage. We will not do that. You want to send a great message to your children? You stand between your spouse and anybody else. The man's needs over here, we want purpose. I need to be productive. I need to be honored. I need to be loved back. And I need to feel worthy. If I don't have purpose, how good am I to be around? You're angry, you're mad, you're frustrated, you're disillusioned, you're mealy-mouthed, whining, crybaby. That's not a good place to be. And if you're not productive in our culture, I mean, we weren't created to retire. We're not created people of leisure. We're created productive. Productive doesn't mean just being busy. It's being productive. In all areas, to be honored, why does the scripture say, wives, honor your husbands, and husbands, love your wives? It doesn't say, wives, love your husbands. At least in my translation. There's something to do with honor that I think God wants to, because if I feel honored, I'm going to fight for you. To be loved back. That's very, very bad to be rejected. And then, again, moving on to women. The thing on women, I put to love and be loved. I actually put women, they want the hope of love. And my wife changed it to this. Because I've seen women love something that they shouldn't be loving. That guy that says the things and does the things that shouldn't be saying or doing the things, and you'd want to hurt him if you knew what they were saying and doing to your daughter. Right? But she said to love and to be loved back. And I believe that women want to be pursued. To feel secure is off the chart, is the mother load of all mother loads. They want to feel secure in every area, financially, relationally, spiritually, emotionally. They want to be secure. How does that happen? The man's got to do his thing. And we want assurance. Assurance, assurance on every area of their life. Assurance, 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 assurance. They want assurance in every area. I mean, they want affection, all that kind of stuff, and validation. And lastly, on the goals, the goal that I want to see is if we could stabilize. If you start out, say you're messed up on any of the things on the right, what I perceive to be observations, you're messed on the left side. The first thing is let's try to create some stabilize where we're at, and then we'll each year, then we'll make it strong, and then we'll make it secure, and then you can become free. When you're truly free in these areas, and you live as a free man, as God had created you to be. And so what do you mean on there? Let's say that you're not a very good role model. Let me see on here. I can't get it. The role model one over there. If you're not a very good role model, then why don't you at least say, I'm going to try and become a stronger role model today. Or, you know what? I put down my mantle of manliness. You know what? I can't do that. I at least have got to find another man, an older figure, a sage, someone that I can go to, they say, hey, I'm screwed up. I'm a mess. Help me. You know, and that person might be sitting three people across from you in church. Or he might be sitting two desks ahead of you at work. People are crying for help. So you see, there's a process. You're not going to go from here to the strongest. You're going to just a process. And again, what does this have to do about money? If you don't understand this, you don't get where I'm coming from. And that's okay. All right? The next slide, let me just see where we're at. All right. What I was going to do on this next section on here, which I'll probably have to, because I'm over on here, because I figure if I could look at where you're, I was going to say where your heart at, and then these are the next slides are all about where you're at financially. So what I'm not sure we'll do is let's take a 10-minute break, Susan, and we'll do the thing on here, and then I'll speed through these 10, or I'll ask God what I should do next on here. How am I doing? Okay, are you getting anything out of this? Okay.